Welcome to Sightseeing Japan, the podcast where we explore the land of hobbyists. I'm Paul Bresson.
And I'm Jason Ealing. So, Paul, have you ever found yourself thinking, you know what I could really use right now? I want a cute girl to make me some cute food and cast a cute spell on it to make it more delicious. Maybe even draw a heart on it in ketchup. And then after I eat that cute, delicious food, I want to cosplay like a cute anime girl myself. Maybe go play a bunch of VR video games. And then maybe I'll walk down a street full of electronics stores, perhaps buy a bunch of those electronics to build myself a robot. And then maybe I'll go buy way too many gachapon. And then perhaps at the very end of this amazing day, I'll bring home some hentai. Do you ever think that?
Who doesn't?
I don't know.
Clearly you do.
What are you talking about? That
that was all hypothetical Paul thoughts?
Yeah, that was just, I was just thinking, what would Paul's perfect day be like? And that's where all that came from. Has okay. Nothing to do with me.
You know me well.
Well, we've been friends for a long time. But anyway, today we're talking about a place where you could do all of those things I listed. You could make Paul's perfect day. And what is that place, Paul?
Akihabara.
Tell me about it. Why are we talking about it? What is this thing? It sounds pretty depraved thus far.
I guess, but it's not, mostly. Akihabara is a neighborhood in the Chiyoda Ward of Tokyo, and it generally refers to the area surrounding Akihabara Station. It's also known as Akiba, kind of an affectionate nickname given to it, named after a former local shrine. But we can get into the history of that a little bit.
I got so much about that history.
Okay. Known for its electronic shops, and also known as a center of Japan's otaku culture.
You can buy all sorts of anime and manga goods. You can go to maid cafes. There's all sorts of stuff to see and do there. And buy. That's really a big part of it, is there's a lot of stuff to buy.
Yes.
And I'll get into that. I have some stuff to say about just the unavoidable consumerism that normally I'm anti-consumerism, but somehow Akihabara just gets into you and makes you want all the things.
It has the things you want.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Akihabara Station is a major station served by multiple train lines in Tokyo, very easy to get to. Just west of the Asakusa neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
What draws you to Akihabara, Jason?
Well, I think the reason that I was really excited to see it for the first time was because of one of my favorite animes, which is Welcome to the NHK. And it's not because I wanted to find Welcome to the NHK merch in Akihabara. It's that in that anime, there are two main characters that actually go to Akihabara and like they kind of show you, well, they do all of the things that you can do. And they show you how exciting and fun Akihabara is. And I wanted to experience that myself, you know? And that brings me back to the consumerism stuff, because in that show, so one character is kind of giving the other character a tour of Akihabara, right? And he's saying things like, this is a mecca for otaku. And if you see something that you like, buy it. That's like the main point of his whole thing is, if you see something you like, just buy it. Because you don't know if you're ever going to see that again. A lot of this stuff is like limited edition. You're never going to find it anywhere else. And that's so true. That's what keeps me coming back to Akihabara. And it's just weird. It's like I've never been to any other place that made me feel that way. It's like almost this internal conflict. It's like it's almost stressful where you see something and you're like, I really don't need that. But that's my favorite character.
Yeah.
And where else am I going to get this? Am I ever going to have a chance like this again to get this exact thing? Like, it's so perfect. I just have to buy it, even though this contributes nothing to my life, really. This is like, where am I even going to put this? It doesn't matter. I just want it so bad. That's what's so weird to me about Akihabara. But it's also what is so great about Akihabara.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't describe it. The psychology behind that is just...
You're hitting the nail on the head with the psychology.
Yeah.
The combination of the limited edition stuff. And unless it's a super famous franchise, you've only got about a year to a year and a half tops from when it was originally released to be able to buy that stuff, or you're almost never going to be able to find it again. And even if it is a really famous franchise, a lot of stuff at Akihabara is actually resold goods. So what comes and goes really quickly, there might only be one for sale, and you might never see it again. It definitely pushes you to the, I got to get it now or I'll never have it.
And it's so weird. Like, I look at the things that I did actually buy, and I think, why do I own this? I don't need this. But then thinking back to past times that I was in Akihabara and I saw something I really wanted and I didn't buy it, somehow I still wish I had bought it.
Yeah. I'm happy with all my recent purchases, although they just sit on a shelf behind me at my computer desk, but I like them.
I guess the biggest thing is the gachapon.
Yeah.
I just have too many and nowhere to put them.
Yeah.
And it feels silly to buy a house just to have a place to display your gachapon, but
it's just the world we live in.
Yeah.
Was it time for that part of the episode?
Oh, you mean the
item of the week?
That's exactly what I mean.
I think it is that time. So this is the segment where we talk about our favorite items from our friends at bentoandco.com, which is a website where you can order authentic Japanese bento boxes, cookware, snacks, and more. Paul, what do you got for us this time?
Today I'm going to recommend the Shokado Kaga bento box. I actually have one of these that I got from Bento & Co. And this is like the bento box you would get at a fancy Japanese restaurant.
So like a little bit less portable than the little super compact ones. It's more of like a display, right?
Yes, it's all about making your food look amazing. So it's one layer. It's all black with some red highlight trim inside. It's a 5-compartment bento box, including one little compartment in the middle for sauces or small things. I love the portion sizes. It just works well for my meals.
Yeah. So, I mean, traditionally, these would have been like red lacquered. I'm assuming this is it plastic?
I think so. I don't think this is really lacquered, but it looks like it's lacquered.
Yeah. Well, if it were lacquered, it'd probably be super, super expensive. So.
Yeah, and it's way easier to clean because
yeah,
it's plastic. So I love it. It makes my presentation go about 2 levels up from where it otherwise would be.
How many levels are there?
10 levels.
Okay. What level are you at?
I have my good days and my bad days. I'm normally between like a 5 and a 7.
Okay.
This puts me in the 7 to 9 range. I can wow somebody serving them a meal in this thing.
That's a big step up.
Yep. Highly recommend it if you're looking for that little extra for your dinner.
Nice.
So if you want to check out all the cool things they have at bentoandco.com, you can use our code SIGHTSEEING10 to get 10% off your entire order. We also have a link from the support us section of our website. And if you use that link, it will automatically apply that 10% discount for you. So go and check them out.
Paul, I thought the history of Akihabara was really interesting because I knew very little about like the history before the electronic shops and whatnot.
Yeah, I'd only heard a couple of vague things, so I was happy to see that there's some really cool stuff here.
Yeah.
How far back did you get?
I guess I was going to start kind of at the beginning of the Edo period, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I have a couple blurbs Edo time. That's where I got my start here.
You can go ahead.
So the area that is now Akihabara was once near a city gate of Edo. So it served as a passageway between Edo and northwestern Japan. Because of this, there were a lot of craftsmen and tradesmen that lived in the area, and some lower class samurai as well, because they thrived on the trade and travel coming through the area.
Yeah, I saw that. And it was described just kind of as a residential neighborhood. That was all that was really going on around there. And did you say Edo or Tokyo?
I don't even remember.
Okay, well, I just wanted to point out that Edo and Tokyo are the same thing. It's just that back in the Edo period and before, Tokyo was called Edo.
Correct.
Just to head off any confusion there. So all over the country at that time, but especially in Edo, fires were a really big problem because everything was made of wood. Between 1601 and 1867, which is basically the whole Edo period, there were 49 great fires in Edo. Edo, Tokyo, Edo.
Wow, that's so many.
49. They killed hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people in total, I believe I saw. It's pretty extreme.
Yes.
There was even a saying, fires and quarrels are the flowers of Edo.
Or wow.
Fires and fights are the flowers of Edo.
What a city.
Yeah, sounds great. And as the city grew, the fires just got worse. Of course, more people means more wooden buildings, more people cooking with fire in and around those wooden buildings. Just kind of a recipe for disaster. It's actually really interesting. If you wanted to look into like the history of fires in Tokyo, like you can really go down a rabbit hole. Read about all the impacts of these fires and the different things that they did to try to control the fires and prevent the fires. Like we could do a whole episode just about fire if we wanted to.
Well, we already did earthquakes, so.
Do you know what they did to arsonists back then?
I imagine it's not good.
They burned them at the stake.
There's some poetic justice to that, I suppose. Yeah,
sounds horrible, though.
Yes, absolutely.
Man, I've been watching Game of Thrones as I read the books, and just thinking about like the things that people did to other people, like just as punishment back then, it's insane. Just insane. Anyway, so one of the things that they did to help deal with these fires was that they set up an area in Edo that was supposed to be a fire protection area that people could evacuate to. And this just happened to be in what is now Akihabara. It was a fire protection area. And they called it Chinkabara, which means fire extinguishing field. That's a translation. At this location, they also set up a shrine for a kami called Akiba Daigongen, a deity that protects people from fire. And Akiba actually also means autumn leaves. That's like the direct translation, which is another reference to fire, because autumn leaves turn red like fire. Isn't that kind of a fun connection?
Yeah.
A side note, so most of the sources I found said that this shrine was for Akiba, this deity, but I also found a Japanese website that, you know, I tried to do the best translation I could, but I don't know how perfect it was, but it seemed to say that the shrine didn't actually enshrine Akiba, but it enshrined a different fire protection deity, but people got confused and thought it was Akiba because that was like the most famous fire deity or something like that. So,
okay.
Yeah. But anyway, so the shrine was originally called Chinka Jinja, but because Akiba was supposedly enshrined there, people started calling it Akiba Jinja, and eventually people started using that word Akiba to just refer to the whole area. So that's why Akihabara has that nickname of Akiba.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It is.
I always thought that it was just like a short version of Akihabara, you know? I didn't realize it. I mean, they have the same origin, I guess, but they developed a little differently, Akihabara versus Akiba.
Yeah. You know?
So, yeah, people were calling the area Akiba, but they were also using a lot of other names for the area. Some of them permutations of Akiba mixed with Chinkabara, that original name. So they would call it like Akibanohara or Akibapara, things like that. And eventually it became Akihabara, which was made official when the area got a train station in 1890, and they called it Akihabara Station. So that's how it became officially Akihabara as it is today. How'd I do? I feel like that was a lot. And
you explained that well.
Thank you. I did my best.
So when that train station was opened, they actually moved the shrine, and it still resides to this day in Taito Ward, to where they moved it in 1890.
Okay.
So the shrine's still around, but it's not in Akihabara anymore, even though Akihabara kept the name.
Interesting.
So that's another layer to that.
Yeah.
Since the opening of the train station, it became a major freight transit point. So you got the development of fruit markets and vegetable markets popping up in the area because they were moving through the area on the trains. Hmm. In the 1920s, the station was opened up to the public for transportation, and it got a large number of passengers, and that really helped bring the area to life.
Okay, I think I saw something about that. So it's like before that, the trains weren't used for people. It was just for goods, and then they opened it to people later on.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Akihabara gained its famous nickname Electric Town shortly after World War II because it was a major shopping center for household electronic goods and also the post-war black markets.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that. Like, I, you know, I'd heard that way back when they had all the radio parts and electronics components and stuff, but it was actually a black market.
Some of it, yes. There were a lot of restrictions still on what could be sold, and capitalism did its thing and people made their money.
I saw that the thing that kind of birthed this black market was that after the war, everybody wanted access to news, right? They wanted to know what was going on because it was a huge, you know, of course, a super tumultuous time.
Yeah.
So they wanted to get radios. People wanted radios, but it was really hard to get radios. So they would go to Akihabara and buy radio parts and components from this black market to make radios. That's crazy.
It is.
So cool.
By the 1980s, many household electronics begin to lose their luster and futuristic appeal as they became normalized. So the shops in Akihabara started shifting their focus towards computers, the new technology of the day. And they begin to attract a new type of consumer to the area. Hobbyists or computer nerds or otaku, however you want to describe them. And that was really the birth and the beginning of Akihabara being the hub for otaku culture in Japan. It was the video game, the computer nerds who first started that.
Yeah.
So from there, they had that clientele. They anime shops opened up, eventually maid cafes, all sorts of specialty stores catered to this new type of clientele.
By the 2000s, it was considered a holy ground for otaku.
So now, Jason, I think we're going to go on a little tour here of Akihabara and hit some of the main points that you might want to see during your visit.
Let's explore.
We're obviously going to start at the station, right?
That would be a good place to start, I think. That's probably where you will arrive. So from Akihabara Station, there's kind of this main street that goes through Akihabara, north and south. It's called Chuodori. You can just think of it as the main street in Akihabara. And basically everything we're going to talk about is either on that street or just off that street in either direction. It's like there's kind of this big, wide main street and then littler streets branching off of it. And it's all just like really close together, super walkable. There's no reason to do anything but walk in Akihabara.
Yeah.
It's just about a half mile strip or so. Another thing I wanted to mention, like if you are really into this stuff, maybe you don't want to take a train into Akihabara. Maybe you want to stay at a hotel in or near Akihabara.
Sure.
Last time we were in Tokyo, we stayed just south of the river that's right next to the station. So there's like really, we're just a bridge away from all this stuff. We stayed at a place called Via in Akihabara. I really liked that spot. What did you think, Paul?
Very nice hotel. And cute mascot.
Yeah. Had a nice little anime mascot in the lobby. So that might be a good choice if you want to be able to stay out really late and not worry about, you know, when the last train leaves or something.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there. But first, Paul, I was thinking, let's check out one of these famous electronics stores.
It is Electric Town.
It sure is. You're even going to see signs in the train station that say Electric Town.
Yeah. Here's
the Electric Town exit. So right next to the station is a place called Yodobashi Akiba. This is a location for a chain called Yodobashi Camera. It's one of the biggest electronics chains in the country. You can actually find these stores, I mean, all over the country, but even just all over Tokyo, there are several locations. But since we're here in Electric Town, why not visit this one? So if you're familiar with Best Buy, which is like the big electronics chain in the US, you could kind of think of Yodobashi as a Best Buy times 1,000. Like, this place is huge. It's 8 stories tall. I promise, if you just walk up and down this building, you'll find things you never knew existed. Like, it's not just DVDs and computers and, well, Blu-rays. I'm showing my age, I feel like. I don't know. Do people even...
Cassette tapes?
I don't know how people are consuming media these days. Everybody streams, right?
What was it, laser discs?
Mini discs and 8-tracks?
Mini discs. I mean, I knew this store was here. I think I've even been in it on like a floor or two. And I knew it was famous. One thing I didn't know is that on the top floor, there's a driving range and a batting cage.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I still have never been to a batting cage in Japan, but it seems like
they're
kind of...
We should do it next time. Yeah.
It seems like they're everywhere. They're really popular.
Yeah, I did it my first time. It was a good time.
Cool.
Yeah.
There's also an entire Apple store in this thing. There's a floor full of restaurants. Oh, there's just a lot in there.
Yeah.
Right on the other side of the station, you can find the Akiba location for one of Yodobashi Camera's biggest competitors, which is Bic Camera, or Bic Camera. It's the same type of thing. It's just a big tower full of electronics. So actually, I remember my first time in Japan, I stayed in Ikebukuro, and right by the hotel I stayed at was a Bic Camera, and I spent like 2 hours just wandering around in that place, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah, and they even, I don't know if Yodobashi does, but most of these Bic Camera places have a big section of liquor for some reason.
That is
I found like
odd.
A ton of scotch in this one. That was one of the things that made me so excited about it.
Wow.
But anyway, I found a really funny review of this one. Like, I don't, all the different locations are going to have different feels or whatever, but for this specific Bic Camera in Akihabara, somebody said, Bic Camera is like a cluttered, less good Yodobashi Camera. However, they sell booze, .. Fun place to shop.
Well, that sums it up.
Yeah. I don't know. Just one review. I mean, I really thought Bic Camera was cool, but I don't think I've been to the one in Akihabara specifically. Hmm. Anyway, ready to move on from electronic shops? You had enough of rice cookers and keyboards and I don't know, all that stuff.
But you'll walk by many, many more as you're in Akihabara. Even some little stalls that they're becoming less frequent, but there's still these little hole-in-the-wall shops that just sell specialty stuff.
Yeah.
That can be kind of cool to peruse.
Yeah. I had a few other, electronics-y type stuff to mention a little later on as we get further down the street.
Okay.
But those are kind of the big, huge chain stores, you know.
Yep.
Bic Camera and Yodobashi. Okay. So since we're still right by the station, let's check out an arcade next, because they're all over the place. I mean, as you walk down the street, you'll just see a bunch of them in Akihabara, but even just right around the station, there are a few of them.
Yeah.
And just in general about arcades, I mean, arcades in Japan are awesome. Like, if you've been to an arcade in the U.S., you don't even know what these ones in Japan are like.
You have no idea.
They're so much bigger than most arcades here. And many of them are several stories tall with all sorts of games. One that I want to call out right here by the station is Namco Akihabara. It's 6 stories tall, pretty hard to miss. It's got plenty of crane games if you want to win prizes. But I'm not really into prizes. I'm more into rhythm games, and they have a whole floor of those.
Yeah.
There's also a floor of Gachapon.
Yep.
And there's a basement filled with Gundam video games.
Yep. So crane games can be fun, but especially when you're in Akihabara, you can just buy every figurine and plushie you'd ever want. You know what I mean? So I always skip the crane games and I just go buy the stuff that I want. That's just me. It can be fun winning stuff, though.
I think the crane games can sometimes have limited edition stuff that you can't get anywhere else.
You're right. But sometimes, especially these bigger arcades will have special things like that.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other arcades you're going to walk by. The Taito Station, a little further up the main street, is super famous. That's the one with the Space Invader ship on the top.
Yeah, that's like their logo for Taito.
Yeah, that's probably the most photographed one.
Taito Station, you said.
Yeah.
Game centers, yeah.
We went to Tokyo Leisure Land last time. We talked a bit about that in our trip recap. It's a little bit west of the main street, but I thought it was less crowded, which made it better, but also the selection of games was really cool as well.
Yeah. So arcades in Japan are going to have games that you're not familiar with, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to see the same types of stuff that you see in American arcades. And if there's some specific game that you're looking for, like maybe you know of one of these Japanese games, because a lot of them have been ported to PlayStation or, you know, other consoles or PC or whatever. So maybe there's one you're familiar with and you're looking for the arcade version of it.
I know what you're looking for. Project Diva.
Yeah, that's right. Now that I know like where to find that, I'm going to go every single time. But the way I found that, because not that's like an old game now, not every arcade has it, but if you Google a specific game that you're looking for, like Google that game's name and Tokyo or Akihabara or something, you'll probably be able to find a list of specific arcades that have that game. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Oh, another thing I want to mention about Akihabara Arcade specifically is that since it's such a touristy place, a lot of these very Japanese games will have like an English mode, and a lot of them are in English in, as default, just so that tourists can easily figure out how to play these games and have a good time. So,
good point.
Good place to do that stuff if you're into arcades.
I played a lot of Dance Dance and Taiko, and both of those have English modes, I believe.
Mm-hmm. If you want to hear way, way more information about arcades, you can listen to episode 74. We did a whole hour or something about arcades.
Yep.
Ready to move on, Paul?
Yeah.
Let's check out some anime shops, my dude.
Gotta do it. Where are we hitting first?
Well, there's one that I'm fond of just because I went there my very first time in Akihabara, and it stuck out to me because it had a lot of really cool stuff.
Sure.
I actually bought, you see that little glasses cleaner microfiber cloth thing right there with an anime character?
I do, yeah.
I bought that at this place.
Okay.
It's called Kotobukiya. And this is, there are multiple locations of this place too. This is another chain, but Akihabara Kotobukiya is what you can search for. And as always, for every episode, if you want to find the names of these places we're listing off, check out the show notes. I always make sure to list them all out there so you can easily search for them on Google or whatever.
On behalf of all our listeners, thanks, Jason.
You're welcome. So Kotobukiya, it's this massive green building. It kind of stands out, but it is off of the main street a little bit. It's like one block back to the west.
Yeah.
Did I say it's several stories tall? It's big. It's got everything.
All these buildings are.
Yeah. They got all sorts of merch from all the hottest anime. They got plushies, figurines, posters, wall scrolls, clothing. I mean, it's impossible to list all the stuff. Like I said, I got this glasses cloth randomly with one of the K-On girls, if that means anything to you.
It's hard to remember because everything blends together, but I think this might be where I got my desk mat. My Final Fantasy X desk mat on our last trip.
I think I remember that. Yeah,
yeah, and I'm very happy. I'm very happy with that purchase.
Yeah, they got a lot of good stuff there, right? A
couple things that set this place apart is, one, that it's less crowded physically. Like, the displays are not crammed together. A lot of these merch stores, the aisles are super tight, and you can't even pass somebody between them.
Yeah.
This store has a little bit more space. Also, it sells new stuff. A lot of the other bigger stores specialize in pre-used stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is all new. So that's cool too.
Yeah.
And they have sections for specific franchises rather than everything's just mixed and jumbled and you got to sort through a million things trying to find that one Yuru Camp thing. Here they'll have like a big section like, this is all Final Fantasy, and you can just go easily look at everything together.
Totally.
So one of the best stores, I think.
Yeah. So like I said, this is one specific shop that I remember and enjoy. But as you walk around Akihabara as a whole, you're going to find all sorts of shops of various sizes selling, you know, similar stuff to this place. Some of them focus on more retro anime. Some of them sell new stuff. Some of them sell secondhand stuff. It's just a jumble. Like, so this is another thing I wanted to say about Akihabara is, like, it's hard to say that there are specific must-see places in Akihabara. It's more that Akihabara as a whole is a must-see. And the joy of Akihabara is just wandering around and seeing all that there is to see. Like, it's not one specific building you need to see. It's just that there's everything that you could want to look at all packed together in this neighborhood.
Yeah, Akihabara is even better. Rather than going there to, like, I'm going to go get this one specific thing, just going there and discovering things is really cool. There were a couple hole-in-the-wall places. I think there was this one place we walked in that was just a main floor and a little basement, and I ended up getting two or three figures there last time. I think I got a Hololive VTuber figure, and I think I got a Makima from Chainsaw Man, and they were the best prices I saw anywhere, and we just wandered in.
Yeah, the prices, too, sometimes that makes it really hard not to walk out with, like, 10 bags of stuff. I mean, I was looking for Miku figurines, And I found a bunch of them for like 800 yen, which at this point is like $5 or less. And they're like big full-size things, not just little, you know, couple-inch tall figurines. So I really had to... It's an exercise in restraint.
I only stopped because I ran out of luggage space.
Yeah. So this is one of the only things that makes me think, you know, it'd be nice to live in Japan. Because it's hard to like bring all this stuff back. But if I had a place in Japan and I just had like an area dedicated to displaying all my anime crap, I'd buy so much stuff and just have like a little shrine, you know?
Yeah. You should just hang shelves 2 feet from the top of your wall all the way around your entire apartment and fill them with figurines.
Yeah, would never allow that.
Yeah, I suppose. I should do that.
Yeah, you should do that.
The thing is, Akihabara has this magic, but I almost feel like I'm such a frugal stick in the mud sometimes that if I lived in Japan, it'd be like, I could come here anytime and buy stuff, and maybe I never would.
Yeah.
But because I'm like, I fly out tomorrow, I have to get everything I possibly want now because I'm not going to be back for a year or two.
Yeah.
And that gets me going.
I guess living nearby would make you, give you the luxury of being a little more selective of like only focusing on your very favorite characters, you know. But still, I feel like it'd be hard to resist just
getting all the stuff. I'd have some stuff for sure.
So as you're looking at all this anime stuff, you might notice that certain shops are selling some more risque anime stuff. You know what I'm talking about, Paul?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, you're going to find sex shops here, but even more likely, you're going to find one floor of a shop that's adult products.
That's possible. And the sex shops in Akihabara, I don't know if they lean more in this direction than sex shops in other parts of the city, but like a lot of the stuff that you'll see is sexy anime stuff. You know what I mean? Like they have sex toys with anime characters on the packaging and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the display boobies that we saw on this last one, and they were just like black with like
hand grime.
Hand grime. Oh, yeah. I'm like, thousands, like tens of thousands of people have copped a feel on this display. And
yeah.
It didn't stop me, so can't say anything.
Well, I liked that. I remember at least a couple of them, they had like t-shirts on, so you could feel it through the shirt.
Yeah.
And one of them, man, I could not believe how realistic those felt.
Okay, yeah, a couple of them were pretty good.
Yeah. Do I admit on the podcast that I kind of wanted to bring those home? It was just
too big. You just did.
I still have a chance to edit it out. We'll see what happens.
Let's leave all the bad stuff Paul says.
You know how I operate. Oh, we should mention doujinshi too. In a lot of these anime shops, you'll see, like a lot of them have floors dedicated to specific types of things. I've seen like some floors of these buildings are dedicated to cosplay. They just have a bunch of costumes, like anime outfits from specific anime, so you can dress up as your favorite characters. Some of them will have doujinshi, like a whole floor of doujinshi. Some of them will have an entire floor of hentai, like anime porn DVDs and stuff.
Yeah.
But do you want to define doujinshi? I don't know how many people are familiar with that.
Doujinshi is fan-made comic books, basically. It can be non-pornographic, but it often is. Some of them are original stories, but a lot of them are reimaginings of animes or books or games that already exist. They use those characters to make them do the things that they imagine them doing.
Yeah. I don't remember what store it was, but I remember one place where I just like walked onto this floor. And it was literally, it looked like a library. It was just shelf after shelf of doujinshi, and they were all alphabetized. And wow. Like they all had the names of the series on little tags sticking out of the shelves and stuff. It was amazing.
We could talk about doujinshi for a while.
Yeah.
But I do think it's really fascinating, and I don't fully understand yet how they get away with it, because Japan has very severe copyright laws in a lot of ways.
Hmm.
Like Nintendo's famous for suing everybody about everything. But these doujinshis people are able to use the characters and make their own stories, and then they're being sold at this store. I don't really understand why that's not being stopped or cracked down on, but I'm not complaining.
Yeah, it is interesting. Does it have something to do with that they're secondhand? Like, do they get sold primarily at Comic Cons and stuff, and then they get resold in these shops?
It could be.
I don't know. I'm just making stuff up. I don't know.
Yeah.
Ready to move on?
Yeah, where we head next?
Well, so right by Kotobukiya, around the corner, there's a place called Tsukumo PC Honten. This is just one example of the many PC shops on this street.
Yeah.
So they focus like specifically on personal computers, but they have everything you could possibly want, you know, GPUs and
they got those water cooling systems.
Yeah, they got keyboards and mice and headsets and all sorts of stuff.
They even have desks and gamer chairs.
So there are a bunch of like this Tsukumo name, that's a chain. There are actually, even in Akihabara, other Tsukumo locations on this street, but Honten means it's their main location. So that's why I wanted to mention this one.
I also heard they sell robots here.
Yes, I saw that. I think
that sounds cool.
Yeah, if you're into robots, I think there might be some other places that specialize in that. But yeah, you can find some stuff here. So I actually visited this place to look specifically for mechanical keyboards.
Ah, sure.
And I did find some cool ones, but I have another place I'll mention a bit later for that. Because again, like any specific component or electronic thing that you're looking for, like you'll find a bunch of places selling that maybe, but if you dig a little bit deeper, you might even be able to find places that specialize even more in that specific thing. So,
yep,
you know, kind of like the anime stuff, like if you wander around, you just might find some really cool stuff that's just right up your alley. You know?
Yeah.
Okay, we done with computers? Y'all computered out for the moment?
Yeah, we've shopped. We've done the arcade. We hit the batting cage. I'm a little famished.
All right.
I want to get spoiled, Jason.
Well, you know, even just up until now, I feel like I noticed a whole bunch of maids out on the sidewalks, like beckoning us in. And
yeah.
Some of them were pretty cute.
Yeah.
And it looked like they were offering food. So what do you say, Paul? You want to relax with some cute girls in cute outfits and maybe get some not only filling food, but cute food as well?
Oh, if you insist, I guess.
I insist. So there are a bunch of maid cafes in Akihabara, run by different companies. But one of the biggest chains is called May Dreamin'.
Mm-hmm.
Like maid plus dreamin'. You're dreamin' of maids. Get it?
Yeah, I get it.
I went to a May Dreamin' location on my first trip to Japan. Paul, have you been to a May Dreamin'?
I don't remember which one I've been to.
Okay. Was it in Akihabara, the one that you went to?
Yes.
Okay.
But it was like in 2008 or something. I don't remember.
Do you want to describe a maid cafe? Tell us what it's about.
Yeah. They bring you in, you get seated, you get waited on by the waitresses dressed in really cute Lolita maid outfits.
Like the black and white French maid outfits, right?
Yes. And they talk to you, they give you attention, they take your order, they draw cute things on your food for you. They might cast a really cute magical spell on your food to make it taste better.
Did you get that?
I did, okay. Yeah.
Did they make you participate in
the spell? Moi, moi, cute.
Is that what yours was due?
I don't remember exactly.
What was the spell? I don't remember how it went exactly, but I'm sure moi and cute were in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also sometimes do performances. They might sing and dance and do cute things on a stage that you get to watch. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Maid Dreamin' is known for having pretty cute maids.
You think so?
Yeah, I saw a lot of good reviews about the maids being cute.
They're selective of who they hire.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a maid cafe where people were like, the food is great here. But a lot of people are like, the food is cute and it's edible.
I mean,
that's about what you're getting at a maid cafe.
I got an ice cream sundae.
Well, that
can't complain about
can't
that.
Be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Get something that can't be done wrong.
Yeah. Maybe we should also mention you have to get food. Like you can't,
yeah,
you don't just get to sit there and get a coffee and enjoy the atmosphere.
You've got to get like a food and a drink or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to hear more about how maid cafes work, we went into a bunch more detail in episode 30. That was an episode about cosplay cafes and animal cafes. And cosplay means costume play, where you dress up as something. So this fits into that category where the waitresses are dressed up.
Oh, yeah.
I also wanted to point out that Akihabara does have other types of themed cafes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's an AKB48 cafe, if you're into that group. There used to be a Gundam cafe, I think, like, right next to the AKB48 place, but it's closed, apparently, now.
There are also lots of pop-up cafes these days.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when new games come out or new anime drops, there's almost always, it seems, a pop-up cafe that comes up that has food themed after it.
There was a pop-up cafe here, a Harry Potter-themed one. I was going to go with my mom when I had a day off work because she's really into Harry Potter. But then I got some mystery illness and I felt terrible and I couldn't go. It was really sad.
Yeah, I haven't seen you sick like that for a long time.
I feel like it was the flu. It was worse than either of the times I got COVID. It was like the worst illness I'd had in a long time. Yeah. My eyeballs felt like they were going to explode. Like there was pressure inside them. It was crazy.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't ask me to go to the Harry Potter Cafe, because that would have been a no.
I know, that's why I didn't ask you.
No one asked, but I said it anyways. There we go. Now everyone can send in their Harry Potter hot takes. Sometimes I feel like I'm the only one that doesn't like Disney or doesn't like Harry Potter.
Yeah, you didn't grow up watching Disney movies, right?
Nope. Still haven't seen a lot of them.
I don't know, Paul. I don't know about you sometimes.
I don't know about all of you. I didn't get brainwashed as a kid.
I'm not a big Disney person, but the Harry Potter stuff, I don't know, it's just a fun fantasy world, you know?
I hate too hard on Harry Potter. Like, the movies were fine. I've never read the books. People say they're good. I believe them.
The recent video game was actually a really solid game.
I have heard good things about that, too.
Yeah. Anyway, we done with cafes? Or did you have other themed cafes to mention?
Were you going to talk about the deer stage later?
That's next.
Okay.
So like I said, there are a bunch of May Dreamin locations, but I'm talking about this one specific one that's kind of halfway down the street on the right side, or the east side. And across the street and around a corner from that place is Akihabara Deer Stage. I know neither of us have been there, but I also know we're both very interested.
Yes. This seems like an amazing experience for anyone that's interested in Japanese idol culture, specifically underground or rookie idol culture, because these are mostly new idols that work here that are trying to make a name for themselves. So it's a restaurant bar type of place, kind of similar to a maid cafe where I think you do pay to get in. But then you get a free drink and then you buy food and you, I believe, pay for how long you stay.
Yeah, I want to say like 500 yen an hour or something, which is just a few bucks.
Yeah, reasonable. And then you get waited on by idols.
And I saw anime voice actors even might work there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I just want to point out, if you don't know what an idol is, we did a whole episode about him, episode 95.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, so not quite like a pop star, but they often sing and dance. But part of the joy of being an idol fan is you get to watch them start out and they're trying really hard, but they're not that great yet. And you get to watch their skills develop and they grow. And as they grow, their fandom grows. And you kind of get that joy. They're not already a pre-polished, ready-to-go pop star.
Yeah. Like, you can be one of their first fans. You know, you can claim that, like, I was a fan before they were super big and famous, you know? I saw that at this place, they do live performances each night.
Yes.
And it's super affordable, because they're not, you know, massive stars. I saw that it's only 1,000 yen for one of these performances. That's like $7, less than $7.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And it includes a drink.
Yeah, right?
That's a pretty good deal.
I never fully got the idol thing. Until I got into VTubers, dude.
Yeah?
Yeah. And like, I like a lot of big VTubers, but there is like a certain special joy in stumbling upon this VTuber that's getting like 50 views at a time on a stream and being like, oh man, I like this person. And then they slowly start growing and they do more collabs and they get bigger and now they're able to quit their job and they go full time and they're streaming more and like it's fun watching them grow and grow into their career and be successful.
Well, and at that level, you get to interact with them. Like, they will actually talk directly to you.
You type something in chat, they're almost very likely to respond to it.
Yeah.
And they get to know you, too. They remember your username and be like, oh, this guy's back again.
Yeah. I'm sure there are people that go to this bar all the time and, like, get to know the idols, you know, more personally. Because I saw that even, like, if you go there just randomly and start getting drinks or whatever, it's not like you only interact with them when you're at the bar getting drinks. They make a point to walk around and talk to everybody there. And I saw that you can even get, like, the little Polaroids like you would at a maid cafe where they'll, like, sign it and, you know, date it and stuff. And
yeah.
Kind of fun. It's like a really personal treatment, seems like.
So one note is, to really fully enjoy this experience, you have to be comfortable using whatever Japanese you can.
Yeah.
Because they're not really going to know English. So even if you know bad Japanese, memorize a few things to say or use your translate on your phone, you're going to have to do something to try to break that barrier. But if you do, I think you're probably going to be able to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, totally. So real quick, since we're in the area, I just wanted to mention another notable anime store. It's just a block south of here. It's called Mandarake. Mandarake, it looks like. That's what the big sign looks like.
I've always called it Mandrake.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure people say Mandarake. But this is another one of those huge collectibles stores. It's 7 stories, and they sell a lot of secondhand goods at this one. So if you're looking for something from an older anime, maybe, this might be a good place for that.
Yeah. And we say anime a lot just because there's so many things, but you can get Magic the Gathering cards here. They have model kits, soundtracks to your favorite anime will be here. So a little bit more than just anime figurines.
That's true. Paul, have you ever seen, I remember, this is 10 years ago at this point, first time I was in Japan, I remember walking into a store, I don't remember what store, but there was a floor that was dedicated to these little dolls that were like almost anime style dolls. Have you seen anything like that?
Like a stuffed animal type doll?
No, like imagine porcelain dolls, like really intricate, detailed little, very human looking dolls, but kind of with more of an anime style.
Oh, okay. Not ringing a bell for me.
Okay. I don't know how popular they are. I haven't seen them in a lot of places. I don't remember seeing them at all since this one time, but they were really interesting because you can buy different heads, different like body parts and stuff. You can kind of mix and match. You can buy different colored eyes and stuff. And then you can buy all these different clothes. And it's like, it just seems like a really interesting kind of subculture where people are really into like customizing their dolls to make them exactly how they want them and stuff. I don't know.
That does seem kind of cool.
Yeah.
Nice little stumble upon thing you found there.
Mm-hmm. So, Paul, I know I didn't put this on the outline that I sent you, but I just wanted to add this one little spot. It's right on the other side of that same block as Deer Stage.
Okay.
Have you heard of Little TGV?
No.
It's a train-themed izakaya.
Oh.
It looks really fun. I think it's the same one we talked about back in the themed restaurant.
Okay, the train bar, yeah.
Or maybe it was the themed cafe. I don't remember which episode, but yeah, I think we talked about this. So you walk in, and the whole place is decorated like a train car. Like, the seats actually came from trains. They're train seats. They got the little handles hanging from the ceiling so you don't fall over when the train starts moving. The menu itself is a railway map, and, like, each station is one of the dishes, you know?
That's so cool.
A lot of the food is train-shaped or maybe served in a train-shaped dish. There's memorabilia all over the walls. There's even a model train in the corner. And they have an English menu. So, like, if that just sounds at all like an interesting experience to you.
It does.
Check it out.
Even train otaku can be happy in Akihabara.
Yeah. I have no idea why it's called Little TGV. But that's what it's called. Well, now let's go back to the main street and head just a block north. And on the left side, we're going to pass Gachapon Hall or Gachapon Kaikan.
I know this place.
Yeah. So I guess we've already mentioned Gachapon in this episode, but I feel like we always need to define that just in case. And I'm sick of doing that. So go ahead, Paul. What's a Gachapon?
Little machine that you put a coin in, 100 yen, usually maybe 500 yen. You turn the lever around for a while, you hear a click, and then a plastic ball drops from the machine, giving you that gachapon sound. And you pull it out and you get a little prize inside, but it's randomized. There's maybe 6 or 10 things that you could get, and you got to see which one you got. And if you didn't get the one you want, you try again and again and again, and you end up with all of them.
There you go. You buy little things in capsules.
And Jason's got way too many of them.
Yeah, I got all sorts of weird ones. And so this place, Gachapon Kaikon, Gachapon Hall, it's literally just a little shop packed with gachapon machines. It's got this big yellow awning. It's kind of hard to miss.
Yeah.
They have some figurines in there, too. Like, they're glass cases with a few of them.
It looks like 80% of the stores just gachapon machines.
Yeah. So, like, it's easy to even spend just half an hour in there walking around looking at all the stuff. And I think I saw somebody say that this place is kind of more aimed at adults. Like, a lot of gachapon machines are aimed at little kids with little kid characters and stuff. But these are kind of more... I don't know. How would you describe them? I remember just seeing like unusual things that aren't necessarily connected to any specific anime or series or characters. It's just like
fun food stuff, you know, like your little model foods or cute cats or something. Or like I got, they were like some goofy animals that I think I got last time.
Yeah.
I got a little cat that's like hunched over with its arm out. That makes it look like, to me, it looks like the cat's like hung over or something.
Oh, yeah. Hung over
like,
animals.
Yeah, it's like really cool.
That was a whole series of gachapon. Yeah, yeah. It's really cute. Hung over animals. That's fun. So that's cool. All right, Paul, let's change it up a little bit. We've been seeing a lot of electronics and anime and, you know, all that other stuff that's very common in Akihabara. But let's see something a little more unique, I guess.
Sure.
Let's head over to 2K540 Akioka Artisan.
Well, that's certainly a unique name.
Yeah. So this is just off of the main street. It's this really cool shopping area under the train tracks. It's set up a little bit like a shopping street, but it's not really a street. It doesn't really feel quite like a shopping street. It's kind of just this long hallway sort of thing. But on either side are just all these really cool little artisan shops. You can find all sorts of stuff there. Clothing, shoes, hats, leather goods. A lot of like handmade leather goods, like wallets, purses. There's a lot of pottery down there too. If you're looking for maybe a special teacup, if you like tea, this would be a good place for that.
Some jewelry. Yeah. Very unique stuff I'm sure you could get there.
Mm-hmm. A lot of handmade things. Paul, you see this right here? Nope. I don't have it on me right now.
Yeah, be worried there for a second.
I was reaching down.
Straight to his belt buckle. Yeah. He's like, hey, Paul, have you seen this?
Well, the little clip where I keep all my keys, I clip them onto my belt loop. And that little clip I got at one of these artisan shops.
I know that clip. Yeah, you always use that for your keys.
Yep, that's where I got it. Okay, so just a little bit further down the street from the artisan place, we're going to come across a place that I really like. And Paul, I'm going to take this opportunity to nerd out a little bit about mechanical keyboards, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'll be back in 5.
I think we have time for this. So this place is called Yusha Kobo Keyboard Specialty Shop. This is a specialty shop that specializes in keyboards, mechanical keyboards, more specifically. We're talking computer keyboards, just to be clear, not like a musical keyboard, if you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
The ones with letters on them.
Describe a mechanical keyboard. What makes it different or better than a normal keyboard?
All right,
Jason?
Here we go. Here we go. You asked for it.
I opened the floodgates.
So most keyboards these days are not mechanical, meaning that they don't have mechanical switches under the keys. Like most keyboards underneath the keys, there's just this rubbery layer, like a membrane that registers key presses electronically, and it makes the keys feel kind of mushy. Like you can feel the silicone compressing under your fingers. But mechanical keyboards have actual switches under the keys with springs in them. So a lot of people like these mechanical switches better than the membranes because they can give you more tactile and oral feedback. By oral, I mean with your ears. They sound nice. They feel good and they sound good. That's what people like about the mechanical switches. And you can get all sorts of different types of switches that feel and sound different. So at this shop, they have this huge key tester, so you can feel and hear a bunch of these different types of switches and customize your keyboard to fit you perfectly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. On top of that, you can customize literally everything else about your keyboard. You can get different sizes. Maybe you don't need a 10 key. You can get a smaller version. Or maybe you do want the 10 key. You could get a separate 10 key that's like, you know, on a different cable from the main keyboard. You can get really tiny keyboards. You can get ones where the keys are organized in a grid instead of like the standard layout. You can get ones that are split in half. You can get wireless ones. You can customize the ergonomics, the colors. The keycaps themselves are fully customizable. You can get any colors. You can get ones that don't even have any letters on them. I personally really like having sets of keycaps that are just blank. Am I going too far?
Do they have hentai keycaps?
They absolutely do, Paul. I've seen those.
There we go.
Should I get you a custom keyboard for your birthday or something?
Yes.
Am I allowed to roll together Christmas and your birthday? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone else does.
Oh, with the keycaps, they even have different profiles, meaning like they're different shapes. There are taller ones and shorter ones and different molds and stuff, so you can get ones that just feel perfect to your fingers, you know?
The customization sounds really awesome.
Yeah, you can really go down like a rabbit hole.
Nearly infinite possibilities.
It's like the jeans, you know? If you really go down that rabbit hole, you'll end up with like 20 different keyboards, and you can't decide which one's your favorite and stuff, but... At the shop, they even have a little gachapon machine where each capsule has a random custom keycap inside it. I have a whole collection of those. And on top of all that, like the aesthetic stuff is cool, but you can even get keyboards that are programmable, meaning that you can customize what each key does. Maybe you have like some repetitive typing that you do at work. You know, you type the same thing every few minutes or whatever. You can make a macro for that so that one key types out that whole thing for you. Or maybe there's a program that you open all the time. You can make a button on your keyboard, open that program.
I'm just imagining it, like opening my work email and just like reply, and I just like hit one key and it's like, thank you for your concerns. I will look into that and address it appropriately. Sincerely, Paul.
Exactly.
And I'm
exactly.
Just like, one button, one button, one button. Hey, I'm done with my emails for today.
Yeah, it can be pretty handy. So, I don't know, kind of a nerdy specific thing, but I say, just considering how much time people spend in front of computers these days, why not really personalize your keyboard, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, it's fun.
I bought a really nice gaming keyboard, spilt a beer on it within a month and fried it, and I've been punishing myself ever since with an $11 Best Buy keyboard that I bought to replace it. Because I deserve it for ruining my nice keyboard. It's entirely my fault.
That's sad, Paul.
It is.
So do you want the hentai keyboard? Or I've seen some really cool Evangelion ones.
Oh, man. All right. An Ava one for work and a hentai one for home.
All right. I could buy you several sets of keycaps, too, so you can switch them out whenever, you know, your mood changes or whatever.
That's one nice thing, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool that you can do that.
Okay, I think I'm done with my
Yeah, let's move on out. Before you get going again.
All right. So now that it's getting late, a lot of the anime shops are starting to close, so maybe let's find some food?
Yes, I'm hungry.
So should we just start heading back towards the station, perhaps?
Yeah. So just north of the train station, in a little shopping complex underneath the train tracks, is a restaurant called Komaki Shokudo, which I highly recommend. It is a vegan restaurant offering shojin ryori, or temple food. So if you want to get a taste of temple food, this is a great, mostly affordable place to do it. Or if you're vegan, great place to stop. I went there twice when we were staying in Akihabara 2 trips ago, and I think you ate there once and mostly enjoyed it.
Yeah, for vegan food, it was quite good.
Well, now I'm ready for a drink.
I feel like a jerk for saying that. It was good food. And, I mean, shojin ryori in general is something you should experience in Japan anyway, just because it's an interesting style of food, and they come up with really creative ways to keep meals delicious and vegan at the same time.
Yeah, you get a lot of different, I like the meals where you get like a bunch of different side dishes and you get a taste of a bunch of different things.
Yeah, I seem to remember they had like a, was it a green tea latte or something that was really good too?
Must yeah, have
used
oat
milk or something.
You got something like that, yeah. Yeah. Well, ready to go end our day with some drinks, Jason? Or you got anything else before that?
I'm ready to drink.
Sweet. So there are a number of places near Akihabara Station to grab a drink. But I think a good place to start before I get too tipsy is a place called Game Bar A Button. This is a cozy little bar, completely decorated with retro video games. When you walk in there, the owner will give you a Game Boy, original Game Boy, and a fat stack of games to choose from.
Wow.
And then you just get to sit there and play, and there's old controllers and video game magazines hanging from the walls all over the place. He might even let you play some other old system that's more rare.
If I had an original Game Boy, I don't know if I would trust just anybody with that, you know? But I guess he's in the area where you would want to be if you needed to replace an original Game Boy.
True. He might just fix them himself.
Think so?
I don't know. But seems like a really cool place to grab a drink and maybe a quick bite to eat. They got some typical izakaya food as well.
It does sound like a cool place.
The next place I kind of want to stop at is a place called Beer Pong Bar Grove.
Beer pong, you have my attention.
Yeah, they have an electronic beer pong table that you can play at.
Just one?
I think so.
Okay.
But they also have darts and karaoke.
Okay.
And other fun stuff.
Sold.
So just like a lot of fun stuff to do while you're drinking.
Yeah, that's cool.
So it seems like a pretty cool place. They got an English menu and English speaking staff to make it a little easier, especially the more hammered you get.
I feel like more bars should be active bars, you know, where you can drink and do things.
I'm with you. I don't want to just sit at a stool at the bar for like hours.
Yeah. I want to throw sharp, dangerous things.
Yeah. Let's do that. So heading on south, just back across the river, we get to Hitachi no Brewing Lab, which is where we held our podcast meetup.
That's right. It holds a special place in my heart for that reason, and because I've been there a few times, I think. I don't remember which times. A few times. But it's got a really cool vibe. It's just a great place to like end the night, sipping beers, looking out over the river there. I mean, it's like literally right next to the river. They got this outdoor kind of patio seating area. They got like string lights, and there are vines hanging from the red brick building that it's in. It's just a really pretty atmosphere, really chill place. It's not like loud and noisy. I don't like those kinds of bars.
Great selection of craft beers.
Yeah. And they
I was
have,
impressed.
Like it's actually, you know, they call it the Brewing Lab. There is actually a brewery there. And I think at certain times you can take tours of like the brewing area, but I don't think I've ever been there when that part was open.
Nice.
Yeah. If you're not really into drinking heavily, right behind that brewing lab is another place called Low Non Bar. It looks really cool. I still haven't been there, but it was one of my ideas for where we might go after the bar closed for the podcast meetup. This place is a cocktail bar that serves only low or non-alcoholic drinks. It's super classy looking, like they do the top tier bartending stuff. It's just without all the alcohol, you know? They use the fresh local ingredients. They got these unique mastercrafted house cocktails. It just seems like a cool experience.
That's cool. Not everybody likes drinking. That's really nice to have that option.
Yeah. Now, since we're here in this area, I did quick want to mention that little weird vending machine corner.
Yes.
That's pretty close to this bar. And I don't know, you could just kind of wander around across the street and you might run into it. Or you could just go to Google Maps, and if you type in weird vending machines and hit enter, that's what it's labeled as, apparently, on Google Maps. So I think it's kind of famous on social media, it seems like.
Yeah.
It's just this random street corner with a whole bunch of vending machines selling really unusual stuff.
Large bugs, snacks with a weird story attached to them.
Not real bugs, just to be clear. They're like toy bugs, but canned yakitori, canned oden. There's a popcorn machine there. I'm not sure if it ever actually works. I feel like it's been broken when I've been there, but
yeah.
Bouncy balls? I don't know, just like random stuff. It's kind of fun. And there are a whole bunch of them. You can just wander through this weird little like alcove and
it's cool to check out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe you've tried your Shojin Yori, you've drank a bunch of alcohol. If you're still feeling like partying after all that, maybe you're not ready for the night to end. You could go do some karaoke.
Yes.
That's what we did after the podcast meetup, and it was awesome.
It was so fun.
These are some of the places that are going to be open latest in Akiba. And this is another reason that you might want to get a hotel nearby. So like I said, you don't have to worry about the train. You can just sing your heart out and then stumble back to your hotel.
What a night.
Yep. Paul, do you remember what... I mean, there are tons of karaoke places in Akihabara. I wasn't going to call out a specific one, but do you remember which one we went to after the meetup?
No, I have no clue.
Okay.
I don't remember where it was. I don't remember anything about its location.
All right. Well, you can go on Google Maps and type in karaoke, and a ton of stuff will come up. Or you could even just look up what karaoke looks like in katakana, and then look for the signs. There will be a whole bunch of those.
Yep.
And if you want to hear all about how karaoke works, we did a whole episode about that, episode 81. And that's the end of Paul's perfect day, right?
Yep. That was nice. That was very nice.
Yeah. Do another one just like it tomorrow?
Yeah, back at it.
Maybe we should just do a trip some year where we just spend 2 full weeks in Akihabara. Check out every single place on that street.
Why not? Well, that was our first time doing a Ward of Tokyo episode. That was kind of fun.
I thought so.
It was kind of like doing a city episode, but more with specific stores than tourist spots.
Yeah.
But the stores at Akihabara kind of are tourist spots. So that was interesting.
Yeah.
I'd love to see some feedback on what you guys thought. Like, do you want to see a Shibuya or Shinjuku deep dive walkthrough at some point in the future?
Oh, that could be fun. Yeah. Oh, now I almost feel like maybe we should have done Shinjuku first. That's like, I can think of so many things to talk about there. But yeah, at the very least, I hope, you know, we could maybe get you excited about Akihabara. Maybe you didn't know a ton about it, or maybe it didn't seem like something you would be that into, but I mean, like any part of the city, you know, if you dig into it a little deeper, every area's got its own special little things.
Absolutely. So that is the end of season 4 for us.
Oh my goodness, it is.
But we will be back before too long. And in the meantime, feel free to check out our Patreon. Any support you give us on there is greatly appreciated. And there's also quite a few benefits to that we are trying to offer.
Paul, I just like 2 minutes ago got a notification that we have a new patron.
Is that number 50?
I'm sure it's not. We're not quite there.
Okay.
But yeah, we should mention our goal, right?
Our goal is at 50 patrons. We are going to do an episode on hentai, Japanese pornography.
Specifically for our patrons.
It's going to be Patreon exclusive. Because the things I'm going to say, I don't want my mom to hear.
Nice.
She actually saw that we did a Red Lights episode. She saw that like ping when we dropped it.
Yeah.
She didn't listen. She's like, what are you doing? And I thank God I was able to be like, that was the patron selected one. I had nothing to do with that. I'm a good little boy.
Yeah. Yep.
And she bought it.
It's
she's
amazing.
Like, she's like, I don't think I'm going to listen to that one. I was like, please don't.
I can't believe you've been able to maintain that image to your mom that Paul's a good little boy. If she only knew.
Stop. This one's not up behind a paywall. Yeah. If any of my family knew all the things about me that you know, oh man, my image would be shattered.
Julie, let me tell you some stories.
You know, I know your mom too, and I got some Jason stories. So
no,
let's,
you don't.
Let's stalemate this.
Fair.
maybe during this little off season for us, we'll drop another Cooking with PB&J episode. I want to make some ramen for everybody.
Yeah, I think we need to work on a lot of stuff during this break. We got a lot in the works, not just for the Patreon, but
yeah,
just brand stuff. New stuff. I don't want to say too much, but
hey, we'll do more folklore episodes. Jason's already bugging me to record one tonight, but my back's kind of hurting. So
I understand. It's getting late, but maybe next week?
Yes, I'm free next week.
All right. Yeah, I definitely want to thank everyone who joined us this season, especially everyone who joined us on Patreon or sent us a message or left a review. You guys are all great.
Yes. Thank everyone for the support. Love it.
Let me specifically call out our Shogun level patrons: Wesley C., Nicholas McKibben, Kevin Harris, Brady K., Jack, Michael Morris, David Imani, Jennifer Crutchfield, Darwin Perrier, Max, Yasmin, Sonny Schultz, Jason, Ethan Teague, and Katarina and Ellery. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Also, speaking to our Shogun and Daimyo level patrons, now that the season is over, I just made a new post on Patreon where you can submit your topic ideas for next season.
You guys could pick whatever you want, but it might be nice if it would be an episode I could show to my mom this time.
I say go crazy. We're saving the hentai topic, you know, for the goal, but
you
anything
can't pick
else?
That one.
Seriously. When I was saying, oh no, the red light district episode, I was totally kidding. I was happy to do that. So.
Does it have to be Japan related? Now that we just had this conversation, could they vote for like Paul tells all his best Jason stories?
Oh no, I don't like that.
Yeah, that let's vote for that one, guys.
Oh no. Well, I guess I did say go crazy or whatever. Do what you want. I'm not gonna put any bumpers on this or anything.
Okay. Let's let it ride.
So yeah, be sure to add your topic idea on that post. You each get one topic to submit. And of course, if anyone else wants to join as a Shogun or Daimyo level patron, you have a month, because a month after that post, I will post the poll with all of those ideas. And then all of our patrons on all levels can vote to select one of those topics.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I'm really excited to see what they come up with this time.
Yeah. We've got a Discord server. That's pretty cool. If you're planning your trip, you need a little advice, there's a bunch of stuff in there. You can comment on each episode in there. We've got a thread for each one. There's anime channel, memes channel, learning Japanese channel. It's a pretty cool place, so feel free to check that out. We must have a link for that on the website, right, Jason?
We do, in several places. I also want to call out the travel tools section of our website. If you're planning a trip to Japan, there's a lot of useful stuff there. There's a packing list. There's some links to useful information and whatnot.
Yeah, it's kind of going to be about time to start planning those fall trips, which we're planning.
Yeah, we got to get on that.
Yeah,
gotta put in that PTO request.
Yeah,
get those plane tickets.
Yeah,
that's when you know what's really happening.
Yeah. You can also find us on social media. Where are we at, Jason?
We are at SJP Podcast on both Instagram and X.
X, man.
Yeah.
I'll never get over that. But yes, we are there.
Yeah. Well, thanks again. Can't wait to start the next season. Can't wait to see what comes up on that Patreon poll. See you next time.